Thanks for tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. If you've never attended in person, we'd love to have you join us on Sunday mornings at 9:30 or 11:05 at 3105 Hampton Highway in Yorktown, Virginia. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
Well, tonight is part two of Marriage Rocks, and tonight we're going to talk about sex. And it is perfectly okay to talk about it because this is a room filled with married people or almost married people, okay? There are a few of you in here who you're engaged or close to being engaged. And so we're going to talk pretty openly and candidly about sex. And there's no kids here. All the kids are out, right? You didn't sneak any kids. There's light, bright lights. Yep, there's no kids in here. So this is a good thing. We're going to be pretty open and pretty candid, and we're going to talk specifically about intimacy and sex. And we're going to actually build on what we started last week. And so if you missed last week, one of the main ideas that we talked about last week is we talked about the problem of marriage. And the problem is in marriage is that we are playing by a set of rules we've never defined for our spouse. If you missed last week, or if you have short-term memory, then this is what last week was about. You grew up learning how to play life by a certain set of rules. And these are the rules that your family, your friends, everyone taught you how to play by a certain set of rules. And in your mind, everyone should be playing by these rules. The problem is you're married to someone who grew up with a different set of rules. And confrontation happens, frustration happens, when you have a set of rules and your spouse doesn't meet your expectations. And when they don't meet your expectations, you get frustrated, you get angry. And we never think to ourselves that we should communicate these rules that we're playing by. Because in us, it's just, this is the rules that you play by. Everyone knows it. But the problem is, not everyone knows it. And so this leads perfectly to what we're going to talk about tonight when we talk about sex. And I want to give just a quick disclaimer, because when I talk to a group this size about something as potentially even harmful for some of our relationships, when I talk about sex, there's a huge gamut of things and people and stuff that has happened. And I just want to make sure that you guys know that I'm going to talk in general terms, that I'm going to talk in big ideas that affect most people. There are some exceptions, though, and there are some things that maybe you're dealing with and you've dealt with them because of something in your past, some hurt, something you've never even told your spouse, something that you've been dealt with, or you're dealing with some things because there's some abuse in your relationship, or there's some mistrust, or there's been some damage. There's been something in your relationship, and if that's you, we'll help you find some help. We'll help you get into a Christian counselor. We'll help you figure out how to get your marriage back on track. If there is physical abuse in the relationship, though, please hear me on this. My advice is always you need to get separated. You need to take some time away. It doesn't mean that you have to divorce them, but you need to break away and have some time to pray and make sure that they've got their stuff together before you put yourself in harm's way. So I want to get that disclaimer out there, because I'm going to say some things, and if you're in one of those cases that something a little bit more extreme has happened or something has gone through it, then this may not apply 100% to you. But for most of us, this is the rules that we play by. And tonight, we're going to talk about sex, baby. We're going to talk about you and me. We're going to talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about sex. That's what we're going to do tonight. And this is incredibly important because, and this is the generality that I want to talk to. This is the group that I am addressing tonight. This is something that I think the vast majority of us have in common. Research shows that at least a third to one half of married couples are experiencing a moderate to major level of sexual frustration in marriage. So research shows that a third to one half are experiencing sexual frustration. All right, so that is a generalization that we can assume that half of us in this room are not fully satisfied, are a little bit frustrated. There's something going on there. And up to half of marriages have a serious kind of frustration, a serious issue, a serious kind of like warning sign, a serious something's going on and you don't know how to get on the same page with your spouse. And I want you to know that that is normal. In fact, half of all marriages at least admit to it. The other half are probably lying. Like, this is it's a huge stat, but I think the stat might even be bigger than what research shows. that this is a huge monumental issue in relationships. In fact, in America today, over half of all marriages end in divorce. And when surveyed, the number one issue in marriages is sex. The second is money. So I think it is safe to say that there are a lot of us in this room that maybe things are okay. Maybe we wouldn't go see a counselor. Maybe we're not complaining about our spouse. But there's a little bit of confusion, a little bit of frustration, a little bit of like, why aren't we on the same page? I'm trying to talk to you one way, and you're hearing something totally different. And you're trying to talk to me one way, and I can't understand what you're saying. And tonight is all about getting all of us in the room on the exact same page. I want to teach us how to speak our spouse's language. And in order to do that, we have to understand a major, a huge, profound understanding. I'm going to share with you something that if you are taking notes, if you're the type that likes to take notes, remember it later, this would be the place to start. This would be the thing to write down. This is the profound main idea of tonight's talk. Some of you need to put a seatbelt on. This is going to be something you're going to be chewing on for a really long time, okay? Everyone ready for this? Men and women are different. Okay? And yes, I quoted myself. I want credit for that, because this is profound. Now, you are laughing and mocking this profound statement because it seems like it is so obvious. It seems like, yeah, of course, men and women are different. But the problem is we say men and women are different, but yet you treat your spouse as if they were the same sex as you. Specifically talking, when you are hanging out with your spouse as a guy, how do you treat your spouse? You do things like you smack her on the butt like she just scored a touchdown. Do you think that in your wife's wildest dream, she said, I really hope my husband gives me a good game smack tonight? Do you think she ever thinks that? No, and yet, it's okay to laugh at this stuff. We're all in this together. What do guys do? We like to pinch and push and grab and smack and we think, okay, this is the way I want to be treated, so this is the way I'm going to treat my spouse. And women, you do the same thing, that in reacting to your spouse, you think, well, if I just pour all of this romance, and if we could just talk about our feelings, why don't you talk more? I just want to hear what's going inside of your brain. And we think that if they would just treat us like our girlfriends treat us, then we'd have this great intimacy. But the problem is guys only know how to speak like guys, and girls only know how to speak like girls. And that leads to frustration, specifically when you get into intimacy, because you're treating your relationship like you think you would want to be treated, and they're treating the relationship like they think they would want to be treated, but you're speaking a totally different language. And our culture does not help with this, because our culture keeps blurring the lines of what the language of sex is. Our culture tries to say that sex is just casual, sex is just, you know, it's no big deal. Our culture says sex starts the relationship, and then you go from there. Our culture says that sex sells. It sells cars. It sells hamburgers. I don't understand Hardee's commercials. Has anyone seen some Hardee's commercials? Like the commercial where like the girl is making out with this nasty big burger? That is gag nasty. I don't want to eat at Hardee's just because they're promiscuous commercials. That is disgusting. Like never in my life have I love food. I love food. I've never looked at food and said, I want to make out with that burger. But in that commercial, she's just like, oh, it's nasty. It's disgusting. But why does Hardee's make that commercial? Because sex sells. And in our culture, we've said that the relationship starts with sex. And that has brought so many problems to so many of our relationships. Because sex was never designed to be the start of a relationship. It was always designed to be the result of intimacy. And when everything else in your relationship is lined up, when everything else is running on all cylinders, when you are communicating, when you are meeting each other's needs, guess what happens naturally? Intimacy. Sex. In fact, sex is supposed to be the glue of a relationship. It is supposed to be the thing that lets you know as a husband and as a wife, everything's okay. That there's no fears between us. I feel safe. We can be ourselves. There's no questions. I'm not scared about anything. My mind's not going a million different places. I trust you. And it results in intimacy. In all my life of pastoral counseling and all my years of ministry, I've never counseled a married couple who had an incredible marriage and an awful sex life. And I've never counseled a couple who had a great sex life and an awful marriage. The two things go together, that if you show me someone who has a great marriage, I'll show you someone who has great intimacy in their relationship. I'll show you someone who has learned to speak their spouse's language. Because sex is the glue of your relationship. And this is why everything in your relationship ultimately leads to sex. Because if there's something wrong in your relationship, if the finances aren't right, if she doesn't feel safe, if she doesn't feel she can trust you, if you feel like she's nagging you, if there's other issues in the marriage, guess what the first thing to leave is? Intimacy and sex. And so in your marriage, a gauge for you to say, yeah, we're doing okay, is how is your intimacy? How is your sex life? And today, we're going to look at a scripture of passage that addresses how to speak your spouse's language. And it's a letter that was written over 2,000 years ago. And it's a letter written by Paul. And Paul was a major player in the New Testament. And he wrote this letter because he'd planted a church in Corinth. And the church in Corinth became Christians. They heard about Jesus and they said, yeah, we love Jesus. But then they still had some issues, which I personally find a lot of comfort in the letter to the Corinthians, because it's not a group of perfect people who love Jesus. It's a group of people who have a ton of issues. Specifically, they have issues in the area of sex. And it's crazy to me how far the church has come since Corinth, right? We have no issues today with sex or intimacy. We've got it all figured out, right? Wrong. It was important back in Paul's day, and it's incredibly important today. And you're going to see that this little portion of this letter that is written to married couples about sex and intimacy is incredibly relevant, and it's going to help us learn how to meet our spouse's needs. So with that being said, let's dive into 1 Corinthians 7. We're going to read verses 1 and 2 to start. The verses will come up on the screen for you. It says, now, for the matters you wrote about, it is good for a man not to have sexual relations with a woman. But since sexual immorality is occurring, each man should have sexual relations with his own wife and each woman with her own husband. Let's stop there. What is going on here? Well, this needs a lot of explaining, because this is one of those verses, and what Paul is about to write is one of those sections that for years I've scratched my head on, and I've just like wrestled with it, and I didn't understand what was going on. I did some research, though, for the backstory, and one of the things that we're missing to our understanding of what Paul is saying is we're missing a letter that the Corinthians wrote to Paul. That while Paul is in prison, they wrote him a letter, and they had some questions. They had some things that they were concerned about. And one of the things they were concerned about, they write in the letter, it is good for a man not to have sexual relations with a woman. Now, we don't know anything about that. We don't know in the context of how that question was asked. We don't know if he just meant period, like ever, a man should never have sexual relations with a woman. We don't know we don't know exactly what was going on there. And so it's a little bit blurred as to exactly what Paul is responding to. I read, though, this fascinating commentary that gave a little bit of insight into the culture of Corinthians, and it helped me understand this better. This may not be the exact understanding of this verse, but it makes a lot of sense to me. The Corinthians were a group of Gentiles. That is, they did not grow up in the Jewish household. They didn't have the Jewish faith. They didn't have the Jewish moral code that Jews had in the day. They came from a very pagan area where sex was highly abused. And sex was highly advertised, and sex was everywhere. Promiscuity is what I was trying to say. Thank you, Porky Pig. Promiscuity was everywhere. But there was something else going on in the Corinthian culture. They were under Romans. They were Roman people. And in Rome, the way that it worked is that families actually pledged their kids to be married to each other. So there was a forced marriage. It wasn't like you found someone, you met them, you fell in love. It was literally like in the neighborhood, they would look around and they would say, okay, that neighbor's crazy. No, they're pretty good. They have a daughter. You're married. And they would trade like livestock, animals, and you'd be stuck with this person for the rest of your life. That's how marriage worked under Roman law. The problem was that it was totally lopsided in favor of the men. That once you got married, a man could sleep with other people that he was not married to. And the wife could not get a divorce. That's just the Roman rule. That was the Roman law. That if a man wanted to go out and sleep with anyone, he could totally do it. And the wife can't get upset. She can't, you know, she can't divorce him. She can't get mad at him. But if a wife sleeps around on her husband, he could divorce her and did divorce her quickly. And back then, women weren't allowed to work. So it was a really messed up scale. It was a messed up system, totally jacked up. And in the Corinthian church, you probably had, based off culture, you had Corinthians who were married, and yet the men were sleeping around, most likely with other women in the church. And they write this letter to Paul, and Paul addresses the sexual immorality that's going on. And his addressing it is this huge, it's this culturally radical thing. It is this idea that would have rocked them. It would have been foreign to them. And he says to them, listen, because there is so much sexual immorality going on all around us, it is best for you to only have sex with your husband. Or it is best for you to only have sex with your wife. Now to us, we think, yeah, that's common sense. That's like easy to understand. But Paul was addressing a culture where literally it was acceptable for a man to sleep with someone who is not his wife and then to come home to his wife. And Paul is saying, no. Listen, I want you to make sure that you hear this. If you're a Christian, you're held to a different standard. And I know you're not perfect. I know you got issues. I know you have temptations. But if you're a Christian, you are held to a different standard. And the standard that you're held to is one man and one woman totally committed to each other. And you've got to protect your marriage. You've got to do everything you can to fight for your marriage. Now, this was incredibly relevant back then, but I think it is just as relevant today. I recently read this stat. Recent studies reveal that 45 to 55% of married women and 50 to 60% of married men engage in extramarital sex at some time or another during their relationship. So Paul was addressing it in his day and age, and we haven't come very far in our day and age. That even in the church, even with Christians, there is still a huge temptation to have an extramarital affair. Now, there are two types of people that have an affair, and I want you to know, if you've been through an affair, if you're currently on the other side of that, if you're coming through that, I want to show a lot of grace and try to understand the situation, but it's in my understanding, there are two types of people that have an affair. There is the shady scumbag who has no integrity and looks for an affair. And there is the really good person who, because something was missing in their marriage, they stumbled into an affair. And I don't know if you've been involved in an affair. I don't know which one is your spouse. But every time I've ever dealt with anyone who went through an affair, they fell in one of two categories. Either they had zero integrity, that the wife should have got out of that relationship because he was going to keep cheating. He wasn't sorry. He wasn't remorseful. He went and looked for an affair. He was just dirty, rotten sinner. There were others, though, that literally they really did love their spouse. But every single one of us got married for a specific reason. There was a reason. There was something your spouse did that met a need inside of you. And when that need is no longer met, you open yourself up to all sorts of temptation. And in this world, there are really good people who really love their spouse. But because a need is not being met, because the wife is not speaking the husband's language, he finds someone who does. And because the husband is not speaking the wife's language, she finds someone that does. And this is incredibly important. If you're here today and you say an affair could never happen to me, I love my spouse too much, I want to tell you, you are living a fool. All of us are one step away from ruining our marriage. You've got to get radical and you've got to get serious about your marriage, because when something is missing, you go looking for a way to meet that need. Last week I showed you a quote from Pastor Perry Noble. It says, you can either fight for your marriage or in your marriage. You can either fight for your marriage and in your marriage. And when it comes to sex and intimacy, this is the biggest fight that you need to fight, that you need to be fighting drastically to protect your eyes from what they see, protect yourself from temptation, protect yourself by communicating and learning how to talk to your spouse and saying, hey, listen, something is missing. When we used to date, like, it was incredible. You would just listen to me all the time. And like, you guys probably can relate to this. When you first started dating, guys, you didn't have a problem listening to your wife, did you? Like, you would probably talk to her on the phone for hours. Now you come home from work and she says, how's your day? And you're like, ugh. But during the dating period, wasn't it different? Like, it just was. Why? Because you were trying to win your spouse over. And so she had all of your attention. And so you listened to her. You talked to her. You communicated with her. You looked her in her eyes. You didn't check your phone in the middle of a conversation. Like, you were zoned into her. And girls, you were different too. Because when you first started getting in that relationship, you wanted him to like you. And so it wasn't hard for him to get your attention, specifically physically. Hopefully you watched yourself and you guarded yourself before marriage, but isn't it true that in the dating period, you couldn't keep your hands off of him? He didn't have to work very hard for the physical side of the relationship. And then all of a sudden you get married, and he had never heard the words before, "I have a headache." But once a marriage happens, headaches strategically enter into the relationship, right? And if you're laughing, you just need to know that this is the case with so many of us. Well, what is happening? Well, men and women speak a different language. And you learn to speak your spouse's language in the early days of your relationship. But then you got married and you got comfortable. And you stopped working and fighting for your relationship. And so, guys, you stopped learning how to communicate with your wife. And girls, you stopped learning how to communicate with your husband. And all of a sudden, then, there's this tension, there's this fog, there's this issue. And it always results in a lack of intimacy. Whenever there's a problem in our relationships, it leads to a lack of intimacy. So Paul then goes in and gives us some advice, some stuff that we should do. And let's see what Paul has to say next. He says, the husband should fulfill his marital duty, I love that word, to his wife, and likewise the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but yields it to her husband. In the same way, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but yields it to his wife. So what is Paul saying? Well, Paul is spinning a new way of saying something that is in the Bible over and over again. And the thing that is in the Bible is that when a man and woman become married and they have intimacy, they become one. They are no longer two separate people, they are one. And when you become married, your body no longer just belongs to you. That your body and your thought life and your actions and the way you spend your money and the way that you talk and everything about you now affects your spouse. Specifically, when you are one, what you do to your spouse affects you. We so often think and get wrong in marriage that if we want to win a fight, if we would fight dirty, if we withhold sex, or if we cut them down, then we've won. But whatever you do to your spouse affects you. And if you fight dirty, if you don't romance, if you don't talk with respect, if you don't show lots of love to your spouse, you think you're winning something. But when you're one, everything you do to your spouse affects you. Everything you do to your spouse. So if everything you do to your spouse affects you, then you need to learn to speak a new language, because you've been talking in a language that you think your spouse should understand, because your whole life you've spoken this way, you've thought this way, specifically about intimacy, but they don't know how to hear the way that you're speaking because they grew up with a different set of rules. If you don't learn to speak your spouse's language, It opens up the door for someone else to speak it. And this is so important. This is more than just intimacy. It's more than just checking something off a list. This really is about meeting your spouse's needs. And when you meet your spouse's needs, you protect them from falling into temptation. But when you don't speak your spouse's needs, you open them up to falling into temptation. And that's what Paul says next. Look at it with me on the screens. He says, do not deprive each other, except perhaps by mutual consent and for a time, so that you may devote yourselves to prayer. Then come back together again so that Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. So this is a verse that if you're a guy, you should highlight in your Bible. You should underline. This is a verse maybe you should memorize. Paul is actually telling married people to have sex. In fact, he's being very specific for it. He says that you should not stop having intimacy unless you've both agreed upon it, and it's for a limited time, and the only reason you should stop having intimacy is if for a limited time you've decided to pray. I've never experienced that. And I guarantee you, if you decide to spend some time away from intimacy to pray, your husband's going to start praying for sex. I guarantee it. The only reason, Paul says, that you should take a break from intimacy, From you should take a time out, a long period of not being close to each other, a time where you're not meeting each other's needs, is because you've decided to fast from it. You've decided to pray for spiritual, like, reflection and for a limited time. So if that's not you, then in order to have a healthy marriage, to not give Satan a loophole, to not give Satan a way to tempt your spouse, then you have to make sure that you are not depriving your spouse. Now, hopefully we're getting on the same page, but we still need to learn, how do we talk our spouse's language? Because it's not just about sex. It's learning how to communicate in a way where you can learn to meet their needs and they can learn to meet your needs. This is something that it's not a thought of my own, but I think it would be a good thought, and you could even write it down if you want to. A husband experiences sex, and from sex, feelings are produced. A wife has to experience feelings, and feelings produce sex. All this is saying is that you speak a different language from your spouse. And if you're a guy, the way that your feelings are produced is when intimacy happens. When sex happens, then the feelings come out. But as a woman, it is the complete opposite. And in order for intimacy to occur, she has to have some feelings. She has to have some emotions, some connections. And so no wonder so much of our intimacy is totally jacked up, because we're speaking different languages and we're trying to meet each other's needs in the wrong way. So I want to speak to men for just a second and give you everything I know about how to speak your wife's language. And this isn't because I'm perfect at this, okay? This isn't because I know everything about women. It's just that in years of studying counseling and in 14 and a half years of marriage, I've learned a few things, and I think these things will help you learn how to speak your wife's language. For you, as a guy, you are incredibly practical. Everything in your life is practical. In fact, you probably get frustrated at your wife because women are incredibly impractical. Men would never wear high heel shoes. They're impractical. Like, unless you were like fertilizing your lawn and needed holes in it, like, there is no reason for a guy to be uncomfortable. You just would not wear. There's no way you would wear high heel shoes. Guys are incredibly practical. Now, I looked up the word impractical because it's just something I have a trouble being. I have trouble understanding impractical. And I had to chuckle because a synonym for impractical is a word that us guys struggle with. Look at this. It's going to come on the screen. Impractical, it's an adjective. This is a synonym. Idealistic, unrealistic. What's that third word? Okay, some of you are a little bit slow and not keeping up. A synonym for impractical is what? And what do us guys struggle with? Being impractical. That's what I was gonna. That's what I was looking for. Struggle with romance. We do. Okay, listen. Listen though. Why is it so hard for husbands to speak their wife's language? Because in our mind, it's impractical. Spending money on roses that are just going to die, that's impractical. Buy me a tool, not me, but buy your husband a tool so they can fix their car, that's practical, right? Spending your money on something that's just going to be thrown out, like, that doesn't even make any sense. Like, just we have a limited amount of money, let's spend our money on stuff that we're going to use. That makes sense. But your wife is speaking a different language, and your wife is speaking an impractical language. It's a language of romance. Specifically, let me break this down, because we think, this is what I thought for years, and I still struggle with this. So often, I am not romantic, because in my mind, I have to match Hollywood standards for romance. And I have to do, like, you know, it's not just one rose, it's like 80 bazillion roses, and rose petals on the floor, and like all these candles, and like live harp music playing somewhere in the house. Like, I think that I have to go big or go home, and I have all, and so I often get overwhelmed with romance and just think, well, I can't pull that off. I can't do that, and so romance doesn't happen. Let me make this really practical. Does your wife appreciate all those romantic gestures? Yes. But at the end of the day, according to psychologists and science, what your wife is really looking for is affection. And romance to her is you being attentive and affectionate. Look at this. I love this by the author of His Needs, Her Needs. It says, in the female psyche, conversation blended with affection to help the woman feel united with the other person. She feels bonded to that person as long as affection and conversation continue on a daily basis. So a woman, the way that she'll feel romance ultimately from her husband is when you are affectionate to her. And the problem with you is that is impractical. You just have a few needs that you need met. You need sex and you need some food and you're good to go. But your wife has other needs. And you've got to learn to speak her language. And when you learn to speak her language, she's not going to have a hard time speaking your language. Now, this is a problem, though, because science has shown us that men and women are different. I told you this at the beginning, but this is a huge thing that you need to understand. Men and women are different. When it comes to words, a woman speaks 20,000 words a day. A man speaks 7,000. Now, let me get even more specific about this. It's not just that a man speaks 7,000 words a day. It's that our limit is 7,000 words a day. So here's what happens with your husbands, okay? Girls, I'm helping you learn how to speak their language. Here's what happens to us guys. While we're at work, we use up all 7,000 of our words. And when we get home, you have questions for us, and we can't muster up any, good, meat. I just want meat. Just give me food, right? We have a hard time expressing words. Why? Because our word bank is done for the day. But just because that's how you are wired, guys, men, you've got to learn to speak your wife's language. And I know everything in you just wants to relax and turn on ESPN and not talk any more words for the rest of the night, and you need to recharge. But your wife, the number one need of her is to have conversation with you. And I want to make sure that you get this. This is a clear illustration of this. Just imagine, guys, that you have a cup of water, and your wife is incapable of drinking this cup without you serving it to her. That is conversation. And so often in marriages, we have the cup, the one thing she needs. It's a cup of water of conversation. And when we withhold it from our spouse, guess what happens to her? She gets incredibly thirsty. And when she gets thirsty, you open her up to all sorts of temptation because she has a need that you were only meant to meet. And if you don't meet that need, she ends up finding someone else that does. So I know it's difficult to communicate. I know it's difficult to talk, but your wife needs you to be attentive. She needs you to focus. She needs you to listen and to talk and to gain about 13,000 more words in your day. That's what your wife needs from you. I love this list by Dr. Willard Haley Jr. These are questions for a husband to ask his wife. And I can't force you to take some notes, but men, take some notes here, okay? This is stuff you need to remember because these are some ways to give your wife that glass of water that only you can give her. These are some questions that you should work on asking. And not if you don't ask these every day, you should ask them a few times a week. When you come home, instead of just turning on the TV and vegging out, try asking your wife, what made you feel good today? What made you feel good today? What made you feel good today? And just hear what she says. And she might give you lots of clues. Nothing may have made her feel good. Or she might let you know what, when you sent me that text in the middle of the day and you told me you were thinking of me, that made me feel good. And that lets you know, man, I've got some brownie points. I've been doing pretty good today. But you need to ask your wife, what made you feel good today? And you want to get into her world and figure out what's going on in there, because women are verbal and they're emotional and they're not like us, okay? So you've got to learn to meet her needs. And so ask her, what made you feel good today? Here's a second question. What made you feel frustrated? What made you feel frustrated? What was it in your day that you struggled with? What was it in your day that just stressed you out? Here's something that it has helped me so much in understanding women. A woman can carry with her 80 thoughts at the exact same time. A man carries about one, if we're gifted two. We compartmentalize everything. So this is why when you're at home, and even if you've had a rough day, if you're watching SportsCenter, all you're thinking about is SportsCenter. And if your wife comes to you and says, hey, honey, will you take out the trash? And you say, yeah, just a minute. The trash isn't a big deal to you. Why? Because you've got one thing on your mind, SportsCenter. And eventually, sometime in my life, I'll get to the trash. But your wife, on the other hand, is carrying 80 thoughts around with her at all times. And she's not just thinking about the trash. She's thinking about what she has to make for dinner. And she's thinking about what she has to make for dinner tomorrow. And she's thinking about next week. She's having people over the house. Next week's not even on your mind. You're just thinking about SportsCenter. And when she says to you, hey, will you take out the trash? And you say yes, but then you forget to take out the trash. She nags you. She freaks out. And you think, babe, why is it such a big deal? It's not that big of a deal. Well, it's not a big deal to you because you are only thinking about SportsCenter and eventually taking out the trash. But to her, it's a huge deal. So ask your wife, what made you feel frustrated? And then act on it. Help her. Listen to her. See what you can do. Number three, what can I take off your plate? What can I take off your plate? Today, just ask her, hey, honey, how was your day? Is there anything I can take off your plate? And you might hear some things. You know what? Right now, I'm so stressed. If you would just unload the dishwasher, it would just mean so much to me. And in your mind, as a guy, you just think, okay, I'll just unload the dishwasher. But she's saying, ooh, baby. He just unloaded the dishwasher for me. I'm telling you, it goes a long way. You fix what's frustrating your wife, and you won't be frustrated. I'm just telling you. That was a joke, didn't go over too well. Number four, what was the most interesting part of your day? When your wife wants to talk to you, she wants to know not just that you're listening, not just you ask her questions, but that you care about what she cares about. And so your wife might go into Pinterest and might go into knitting and I don't know, whatever else your wife is into. And at that moment, that is when you spark up and say, I'm really interested. Because when you show that you're interested in what she's interested in, it goes a long way. And so ask your wife, what was the most interesting part of your day? And see what she says. And find interest in it. When you do that, you learn how to speak your wife's language because it's all about communication. And when you communicate, men, when you communicate with your wife, she's going to have a lot easier time meeting your needs. This is a staggering stat, but an estimated 24 million American women say they don't have time, are too exhausted, or just aren't in the mood for sex. Well, it's no wonder because the only need they have, they don't have the need of sex like guys typically have the need for sex. They have the need for conversation. And when conversation isn't happening, guess what? All the pressures of the world, because they're juggling 80 thoughts at once, they're all weighing on their wife. And this is why at night she strategically gets a headache. This is why she's not in the mood and not receiving your advances. It's because she's carrying the world on her shoulders. And if you would just talk to her, you'll take off some of the weight and she'll have a lot easier time meeting your needs. So if you want to speak your wife's language, you got to learn to talk. And those are some questions for you. Now, wives, I want to speak to you because I want to teach you how to speak your man's language. I know this is hard for you to fully grasp because you're a woman and you are complicated and you think about a million things and your world is just totally different. It is way easier to figure out a man than it is a woman. This is, if you want to speak your man's language, this is all you need to do. Call Victoria and ask her what her secret is. I'm telling you, if you want to speak your husband's language, call Victoria and ask her what her secret is. And if you're sitting here and you're saying, I can't afford Victoria's secret, then take a t-shirt, cut some strategic holes, and voila, you have spoken your husband's language. Okay? Now, I told you we were going to be candid. As a female, there's a great chance that in your mind you're thinking, it just can't be this easy. Like, surely he's carrying the burdens of the world like I am. Surely he's thinking a million things like I am. No, we're not. And if you want your husband to speak your language, you've got to speak his language. And the illustration of the water is the exact same thing. Guys are wired differently than women. And just the same way that you need conversation, your man needs sex. It is a glass of water that only you can provide. And when you withhold the glass of water, he gets thirsty. And when he gets thirsty, Satan has a foothold to open up temptation. If you want him to meet your needs, you've got to learn to meet his needs. Does that mean you have to be in the mood every time he is? No. Guys, some of you just need to calm down a little bit, okay? But here are some practical ways that you can, as a wife, you can meet your husband's needs. And this would be a good place for you to take some notes. These are according to Dr. Douglas Rosenau's actions for a wife to show her husband. Okay, these are actions for wives to show their husbands. Number one, budget and spend a certain amount of money each month on your sex life, such as lingerie, new sheets, and a week and away together. Budget and spend a certain amount of money each month on your sex life. That might seem crazy to you. That might seem foreign. You might say, we just don't have enough money. But what if you just budgeted a little bit of money? And when I say you need to get away, I am convinced that at least two times a year, every 6 months, you need time away from your kids. Okay? This isn't a biblical verse. Like, maybe you have a different way of understanding it. But I don't know how you can have the type of intimacy that a guy needs in a relationship if there's not a break from the kids ever. And two times a year, you need to find a sitter you trust, a parent, someone, and get away for a weekend. And you can't afford to do that if you don't budget for it. So budget some money specifically for your sex life. That'll go so far. You tell your husband that you've booked a hotel a month away, man, he's going to be fully attentive to you for that entire month. Like, he's going to, whatever you want, babe, dishwasher, I'm on it. Like, I can't wait for that month, that weekend away. Number two, plan a sexual surprise once a month in which you try to blindside your husband in an arousing sexual way. I feel so inappropriate reading that. I didn't come up with it. I didn't write it. It's a doctor, okay? He knows what he's talking about. But plan a sexual surprise once a month in which you try to blindside your husband. Typically in marriage relationships, because sex is more of a need for guys, the guys are the ones that do the advancing. That means that the guys are the ones that get rejected the most. But what would happen? We're not talking about every day. We're not talking about three times a day. We're talking about once a month. You creatively surprised your husband. It would go wonders in him learning how to meet your needs. Number three, oh, this is getting awkward. Flaunt your nude body at unusual times just to enjoy his reactions. I didn't write it, all right? I just copied and pasted it. That's here, okay. Focus. Here's the truth. Here's the truth of the matter. Your husband desires something that you wouldn't even appreciate. If he flaunted you his body, you'd be like, put that away. What has gotten into you? But your husband speaks a different language than you. And at different times, what if you surprised your husband? It would go a long way. Now, this is not something to be done in church or when the kids are in the room. Like, there's limits to this, okay? But when you guys are alone at appropriate times, flaunt something, it'll go a long way. Number four, keep a mental note, and regardless of fatigue or low interest, initiate sex at least once a week. Once a week. Keep a mental note and just see how you're doing. Now, this list may seem incredibly difficult to you. Why? Because these aren't needs that you have. But you've got to remember that you are one. And when you got married to your spouse, your body is no longer just your body. Your body is his body, and his body is your body. And that means that because you are one, whatever you do affects your spouse. And if you want to have a healthy marriage, you're going to learn to start speaking a different language. Because as long as you communicate the same way that you want to be communicated to, there's going to be friction and tension, and it's going to lead to all sorts of problems. But if you would put these few things into practice, it would open up the lines of communication, and you would experience intimacy unlike most marriages around. Here's an exercise that I would encourage all of you, every single one of you to do. Every husband and wife need to sit down and answer this question. My spouse married me because he or she thought the pleasing things I was doing while dating would continue for the rest of our lives. Am I holding up my end of this bargain? When you started dating, there were certain things. Girls, you were probably more physical. You were more interested. He didn't have to work that hard. You never had a headache. All that stuff that you did in the early days, are you still holding up your side of the bargain? Guys, you used to listen to your wife. You used to be interested in her. You would call her, and you would listen, and you would talk to her, and you actually cared about what she had to say, and you listened to it, and your mind didn't drift off to think about something else, and you need to go back to those early days. Because that's why they married you. And in their mind, they thought it was going to be like this forever. But what did we do? We changed. Both men and women changed. And we need to get back there. And we need to be asking, are there things that I did to win my spouse over that I'm no longer doing? Get back to doing those things and watch how intimacy is a result of your commitment. So here's the application for tonight. There's one for men and one for women. Men, if you want to meet your wife's needs, go on a date. This is as clear of an application, oh, I already gave the women one, all right. Women, we'll just give it away. If you want to meet your husband's needs, boom, chicka, wah, wah. That's the application for women. Here's an application for men, though. I'm being dead serious about this. Date nights don't seem like that big of a deal. Why? Because they're impractical to you. You'd rather get work done. You'd rather do something. Your mind doesn't work that way. But a date night where you can say, hey, honey, tonight I've taken care of the child care. Our kids have a sitter. I have a plan, and this is what I've had to do. I hate rejection, and so when I come up with a plan, and Monica's like, eh, I feel like, oh, she hates me. Like, so I, in my relationship, I've had to come up with three plans. I have three options for you, honey. We're going to go on a date tonight. Option one is we can go to Olive Garden and a movie. Option two is we can go to Carrabba's and for a walk. Option three, we can just sit down and relax because the kids aren't home. You pick which one, and then she picks a date, and that's, you need to come up with some options. You need to plan everything, and you need to initiate a date night, and you need to keep it holy. If you would do this even just once a month and show your wife how important she is, and please don't go to a sports bar where sports centers all over the TVs and you're not going to listen to her. Go to a place where you can focus on her. And when you focus on her, watch how it's not hard for her to speak your language. And wives, seriously, you need to learn to speak your husband's language. And when you speak his language, it becomes a lot easier for him to show you these feelings that are hidden in here that it's not natural for him to express. When you meet his needs with sex, because feelings for men come out of sex, he'll communicate with you and he'll talk to you a lot more. It only is going to happen, though, if you are committed, like passionately committed to speaking your spouse's language. And when you do that, you'll watch your marriage will be unlike any other marriage around, because every other marriage is speaking a different language. And every other marriage struggles when it comes to intimacy. But as Christians, you're called to a higher standard. So let's learn to meet our spouse's needs. Would you pray with me? God, thank you so much for this day. And thanks for letting us have some fun and laugh, and but also for challenging us. And God, marriages aren't easy. They're incredibly difficult. And so we just ask in Jesus' name that you would give us the courage to do whatever we need to do, no matter how difficult. God, as men, would you help us to learn to be godly men that meet our wives' needs, that learn to listen and to communicate and to talk. And as wives, God, would you help the wives to learn how to meet their husbands' needs? And together, ultimately, would you help us to have marriages that point people back to you and how much you love us? And we're just so excited for what you're going to do and how you're going to change our lives through the things we learned tonight. In Jesus' name, amen.
We hope you've enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website, nextlevelchurch.net, or find us on Facebook or Twitter.